Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by Sarah Tomlinson, author of the debut novel, The Last Days of the Midnight Ramblers. Sarah is a former music journalist and has been a ghostwriter since 2008, penning more than 20 books, including 5 New York Times bestsellers. Bestselling writer Jenny Jackson wrote about Tomlinson's novel, a seductive tale of fame, power, and celebrity. Tomlinson cast a spell over the reader while asking fascinating questions about ways we exchange money for access, secrets, and sometimes even love. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your novel, The Last Days of the Midnight Ramblers, how would you describe the novel?
I would describe it as a mystery that is set in the world of rock and roll, and it centers around our hero, Mari, who's a young ghostwriter trying to establish herself in the industry, and her client, Anka, who is a legendary beauty and style icon who was involved with several members of a band, the Midnight Ramblers, including her husband, Mal, who died under mysterious circumstances. And so there's a lot for Mari to tackle in the book when Anka brings her in as a ghostwriter.
That's great. And I'm curious, do you remember the original idea or impetus for the novel?
I sure do. I was talking to my longtime agent, Kirby Kim, who's become a good friend. We have worked together since my first ghostwriting project back in 2008. And he suggested that I should write a thriller about a ghostwriter. And he always maintains, which I think is very true, that readers love to learn about a new world. And since ghostwriting is an industry that people seem to be fascinated by, but don't generally have access to, you know, here in Los Angeles, where I live, you might meet a ghostwriter. I have met a few out at a cocktail party or a literary event, but I always find that people are super curious about what I do, how I do it. And so Kirby thought that that would be a great seed for a novel. And then once I had that, of course, I had to think about who was my ghostwriter. I knew she was based on me, but at what point in my career, because I wanted her to have some room to grow as I've had to do as I have progressed as a writer and a person. And also I had to figure out what kind of mystery she was going to solve.
Well, given that this is a rock and roll novel, did you have a soundtrack or playlist that you put together while you were writing the novel?
I sure did. That's a great question. I love to listen to music when I'm writing. I feel like, and we were talking before we started recording about Lucinda Williams and how we're both just deeply passionate about her music. And I think what I really love about Lucinda is not just her songwriting itself, but also the way she creates almost an atmosphere or a world in her songs through the lyrics, but also through the ambiance of the music. And so that really has an influence on me when I'm writing. I might listen to someone like Lucinda if I want to get into a certain mood. But I was particularly inspired by the songs of Keith Richards. So we know that the Rolling Stones have been a popular and powerful rock and roll band for many decades, and that Keith Richards and Mick Jagger wrote many of the songs together. But there are also a few songs in their catalog which Keith gets solo writing credit for. And I have a character in my book named Dante, who's very loosely based on Keith. Keith was just sort of the early inspiration for him. And I did think, though, what kind of songs would Dante write, and would they be similar to the songs that Keith wrote? And so I often would cue those up when I was writing.
That's great. As a big Stones fan, I actually don't know. Like, what are the most popular one or two songs that Keith wrote in their catalog and gets solo credit for?
Well, it's interesting because I don't even know that they're the most popular, in that they're just not nearly as well known as the big hits. But my favorite is You've Got the Silver. And I always assumed that Keith wrote it for his longtime wife, Anita Pallenberg, who obviously is very associated with the stories and the legend of the Stones. And my character, Anka, was loosely based on Anita Pallenberg and another girlfriend named Uschi Obermeyer that Keith had in the 70s. And so I wouldn't say that it was meant to be a biography or a historical representation of these actual people, but I thought a lot about their spirit as artists and as cultural icons. And I tried to use that as the seed for the characters I was writing based on them.
As you've talked about, you've worked as a successful ghostwriter. How did you start your career as a ghostwriter?
Well, I actually had worked as a music journalist, as my character Mari does, and as you mentioned, and I was working primarily for newspapers, the Boston Globe, and then when I moved to Los Angeles, the LA Times, and it was incredibly rewarding work, and I had some great mentors who taught me a lot about writing, but it was also really difficult. I think we know that culturally, it has been a difficult time for journalists, particularly newspaper journalists or print journalists, for the past, 10 or 15 years now. And because I was living in Los Angeles, I was lucky enough through a friend to get offered the chance to apply for my first ghostwriting job back in 2008. And when I was hired, I found that I really loved the work, because if you're spending, 3 months or 6 months or sometimes a year with a client working on a whole book for them, it allows you to go much deeper than you could simply talking to them for 20 minutes or an hour for a profile you might do for the newspaper.
Sure. Well, I know that, a lot of ghostwriting projects are kind of confidential, but I'm curious what types of, and if you can't name specific titles, I'm just curious what type of book are you doing, kind of musician or celebrity memoirs? Does that help?
Sure. Yeah, I do have to be discreet in order to stay
sure.
in business.
Yeah, of course.
But they have primarily been memoirs, and often memoirs of public figures, whether they be actors or musicians or, someone who's on a reality TV show or who has a role, sort of doing some sort of TV programming. And then there's also books that are almost like, I wouldn't say exactly self-help books, but maybe self-improvement books where the person
sure.
is particularly good at a certain aspect of business or life. And so they feel like they have something to teach readers through the experience of sharing their story and sharing some of the tips of how, they have thrived in their professional life and their personal life. And I can actually tell you about a book that I have co-writing credit on. So that's a little bit different than ghostwriting
sure.
when you're
mm-hmm.
actually given the co-writing credit. And this is with the actor Russ Tamblyn, who is perhaps best known for his role as Riff in the original West Side Story. And he also had a resurgence in his career when David Lynch cast him as Dr. Jacoby on Twin Peaks, who is the kind of crazy therapist who wore one red lens in his glasses and one blue lens. And Russ has had this incredible career where he literally started out as a child actor, was directed by Cecil B. DeMille, went to the Little Red Schoolhouse with Dean Stockwell, who was his best friend, and Elizabeth Taylor. And then at the height of his popularity in the 60s, he dropped out and moved to Topanga Canyon, which is a slightly lesser known canyon than Laurel Canyon, which has been written about a lot in popular culture. And he and friends, including Dean Stockwell, the artist Wallace Berman, and of course, the musician Neil Young, who was one of his best friends and mm-hmm. is quite famous, all lived in Topanga. And they were making art. They were inspiring each other. They were dropping by each other's workspaces. And it was just an incredibly vibrant and rich cultural moment that I hadn't seen represented in a book before. And I was really excited to have the chance to explore. So I've worked with Russ on this book for a couple of years now, and it comes out April 9th through Blackstone Publishing. And I could not be more proud or excited to help him have his victory lap. He just turned 89 right at the end of last year. So we're very excited to put his story out into the world.
That's great. And I'm curious, how did it feel writing your own novel versus writing a ghostwritten book?
Well, it was incredibly gratifying to have the chance to write my own novel. It has really been my dream. I took my first creative writing workshop when I was 16 and felt like, yes, I'm a writer. This is what I'm meant to do. And of course, becoming any kind of artist is not quite that straightforward, right? It takes a long time to master the craft and to figure out what you have to say. And so I really have spent about the past 30 years of my life working on my fiction writing in the same time that I was, learning more about writing through being a music journalist, through being a ghostwriter. And I do have three earlier novels that are lovingly tucked away in a drawer that did not ever make it out into the world. So it's just literally, I know people use this term probably too much, but it is a dream come true to actually have gotten to write my own book, which was just rewarding in and of itself, and then to actually find a publisher for it and to know that it's coming out into the world for people to read it.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Sure. And I'm curious. I mean, you talked about earlier the state of print journalism, which I think we all know, and it's sad for people who did grow up with music journalists at most major newspapers. What is your thought about music criticism and music journalism now? Do you think it will all be done via digital and Substack newsletters, et cetera?
I mean, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, but in my own experience, unfortunately, many print magazines are no longer able to publish. It's just not financially viable for them to do so. And I think some of them are still trying to do high quality criticism and reporting online, which, of course, many people just consume all of their information online anyhow. So in some ways, that might just be keeping with the times. But I do also know that many daily newspapers, as I had the privilege to write for, just don't have the budget anymore to have staff journalists on, staff critics or staff journalists in the arts as part of their newsroom anymore. And of course, I see a real merit in community reporting and political reporting, in international reporting, if that's where their budgets are going instead. But as someone who does value the arts and feel like they're an important part of our experience of being human, of course, I feel like they should be funded as well, or coverage of the arts should be funded as well. And so I know personally many former critics and pop culture writers who have gone on to start their own Substacks or Patreons. And I don't know how well they're doing financially in terms of if they have paid subscribers, is that keeping them going? But I do think that at least it does give them the opportunity to commune with other fans, right? And that's part of what's so satisfying about having a handful of critics or writers that you appreciate if you're a music fan or a film fan or a TV fan or a book fan, is that you start to get to know their taste. And even like you and I had that bonding moment over Lucinda Williams at the beginning, it's just that feeling of like finding your community, right? People who share a passion for the same artist or the same perspective that you do. And so I do hope that people will continue to support and seek out Substacks. And also, I will say, if you care about the arts, it is a really valuable thing to put some of your money towards supporting a publication that is covering the arts, whether it's a mainstream publication or, a smaller literary journal or online arts magazine. The donations that we make to them, I think, are more important than ever, or the subscriptions that we give. You know, a lot of stuff is available for free, but more than ever, I think it matters where we put our money. And if we can be thoughtful about that, we can also support this community that I'm talking about of people who care about the arts and want to see it thrive.
I agree. Well, what writing advice would you offer for those who are writing their own stories or novels?
Well, it's interesting because I accidentally had the perfect path as a writer, and it was really through being a journalist. And I had no idea how profound that experience was going to be, and what it did, especially because I was a freelance writer, so I only got paid if I handed in the concert review or the feature on the band. And so I just really wrote every day. And this was in my 20s at a time when, it's not necessarily the most disciplined moment in our life, let's just say. And I've always had friends and people I meet socially, or when I do, teaching at workshops or writer's conferences, they ask me like, well, do you ever have writer's block, and how do you get past it, and how do you make yourself sit down? And I just literally had to sit down. I didn't have a choice. And of course, once I did that, it became a habit and it became a discipline. And some days were bad. The writing did not turn out well, but I did it anyhow. And that does help you to learn and to improve. So I know there's no way to recreate that exactly, right? You can't just step into a paid writing gig if if there's not one available to you. But I do believe in, you know, I have lots of friends who use some of these. Oh, there's one I believe called Pomodoro, which is like a timing app for your phone that sets these 20-minute increments. And I do think that can be powerful, where even if you just say, I'm not going to get up and get another cup of coffee for 20 minutes. I'm not going to check my phone for 20 minutes. I'm just going to sit here and write. Or if need be, I'm just going to sit here and stare at that blank page. And then when I reach the end of the 20 minutes, I'll give myself a 5-minute break and then I'm going to go back in. And I think if you can force yourself to do that, and it may be painful the first couple of days, I'm not going to lie, I think you can develop discipline that way. And it will be really good for the craft of your writing. And then one other thing I'll say is just finding readers. I was so lucky to find readers who were editors of my work. But I also, you know, have peers that I've cultivated, you know, a writer's group that I'm in, other community members whose writing I admire, and whose opinions I trust, and I do share work with them. And I think that can also help you to improve as a writer and to not feel so alone, because it can be a long process.
Sure. And so I'm curious, are you working on another novel now?
I am. I was fortunate enough when I signed on with Flatiron Books, who is my publisher for The Last Days of the Midnight Ramblers, and my wonderful editor, Zach Wagman, who has helped me to bring it over the finish line and make the book even better than it was when I sent it in to him. They actually acquired my second novel as well. And so I'm about 2/3 of the way done with that, and I'm hoping to finish it maybe by the summer and work with Zach on it, and then hopefully bring it out as soon as possible.
That's great. Well, what novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Well, I did read a book by a longtime literary fiction author named Sigrid Nunez. Her new book is called The Vulnerables, and I thought that was just beautiful. She's an incredible prose stylist and a really thoughtful observer of human nature and culture. And so I always enjoyed being in her world, and I thought that was beautifully written. I also read quite a few mysteries and thrillers these days, since the books I'm working on are mysteries. And I've become friends with a writer through being at events and conferences. Her name is Nina Simon, and she wrote a wonderful book called The Mother-Daughter Murder Night. I hope I got that right. I apologize, Nina, if I didn't. But she just wrote this wonderful, like, multi-generation mystery about this crime that happens up in the Santa Cruz Mountains. And she's an incredible nature writer. So everything she writes about the landscape where the mystery happens is just gorgeous. And then the characters of the grandmother, the daughter, and the mother are just great, funny, well-realized, you know, well-written. So I really enjoyed that, and I didn't know who did it. So it was, you know, a mystery that I enjoyed finding out. Oh yes, I just looked it up. I'm sorry. It's called Mother-Daughter Murder Night by Nina Simon, and it's really wonderful.
That's great. Well, what music have you discovered recently or been listening to a lot?
There's a wonderful songwriter, I should say, and musician who lives in Los Angeles, and her name is Jess Williamson. And I think she put out one of the best albums of last year. It was called The Hunter. No, I'm sorry. It was called Time Ain't Accidental. The Hunter was my favorite song from it. And I've had the chance to see her play live a couple of times. I think she's an incredible lyricist, similar to Lucinda Williams. I think she does a great job of observing human nature, observing relationships when they go well, when they don't go well. She writes some great songs about heartbreak, which of course Lou does as well. And yeah, I just think she's so talented, and it's exciting because I don't know exactly how old she is, but, you know, certainly at the beginning of her career. And I feel like she's really finding her footing as a songwriter. And it's exciting to think of the albums she still has in her that she has yet to write.
That's wonderful. Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you or your debut novel, The Last Days of the Midnight Ramblers?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, I hope people will get in touch and check it out. I have an Instagram, and I'm on there quite a bit. And my Instagram handle is my old nickname from when I was a music journalist, which is Duchess of Rock. And so There are updates there from my publisher. There's information about the events I'm going to be doing around the country to support the release of my book on February 13th. I'm also working very late in the day on getting my website updated. So you can find me at sarahtomlinson.com. I will admit, if you were to look today, it is still about my last book, which was a memoir that came out in 2015. As we know, these to-do lists when you're launching a book can sometimes get a little overwhelming, but I'm working with a great web designer and I know we'll get the new information up there in the next week or so.
That's great. Well, again, we've been speaking to Sarah Tomlinson, author of the debut novel, The Last Days of the Midnight Ramblers. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Sarah, thanks for doing this interview.
Oh, thanks so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Absolutely.